War to End All Wars, it was called. Tomorrow is Veterans Day, which honors all those who have served in uniform of our country. Before it was Veterans Day, it was originally Armistice Day, which marked the end of the Great War, that war to end all wars, what we now call the First World War. In Europe, both sides of the conflict fought the war as a holy war. Both sides claimed God as an ally. Its first commemoration marked the armistice that was signed in the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month in 1918, 101 years ago to tomorrow. The original Armistice Day, quote, should be commemorated with thanksgiving and prayer and exercises designed to perpetuate peace through goodwill and mutual understanding between nations. Our Congress passed a law in 1938 declaring it a legal holiday, a day to be dedicated to the cause of world peace. It has been called Veterans Day since 1954. In British countries, it is called Remembrance Day, and today is Remembrance Sunday and identified by a red poppy, which were seen as the fields where the World War I graveyards became. In 2014 was the 100th anniversary of the start of the First World War, and during this war, over 9.1 million military died and 7 million civilians. Germany, Britain, and France, and most of Europe lost a generation of men. In 1916, the population of Europe was 330 million people. America, we lost 100,000 when we entered the last year of the war in 1917. In the Battle of Somme, which was between July and November of 1916, the Allies lost 650,000 and Germans lost 500,000. And that was only those that were killed. Think of that when you think of the wall in which we have 7,000 names and how significant that must have been on that population of Europe during that period of time. It was called the War to End Wars. Radical nationalism fueled the conflicts, and the world chose sides. For the past 5 years, both sides of the Atlantic, we've seen the rise of nationalism marked by xenophobia and the opposition of globalization. Currently, our world has engaged in conflicts for over 20 years, and we have just committed additional troops to the Syrian oil areas. Terrorism has become our world's war because terrorists have access to military-grade weapons and systems. The carnage as a percent of population does not approach that of the war to end all wars. The Great War contributed universally to a feeling of sacrifice, but these last 20 years of conflict saw very little national commitment, either in treasure or casualties in proportion. This morning's service will look at the poetry and the music that came out of the Great War and visions of war which the artist presented. In Britain and her empire, the war against the Kaiser lasted much longer and much more devastating loss to that entire generation of men who went to war and did not return or return deformed physically or emotionally. This same generation on both sides of the front volunteered for God, country, and king. The same sentiment experienced fighting for the Kaiser. From young farmers to college scholars, the generation marched off to a noble fight only to find that the war was not against a demonic enemy, but a battle against disease in muddy trenches and massive artillery guns and suffocating gases. Both sides fought that same enemy. Both sides swaggered off in enthusiasm of nationalism gone awry and returned disillusioned and changed in ways that only war could instill. We know now what was called shell shock during that First World War was really post-traumatic stress. Many World War I veterans spent the remainder of their lives trying to recapture their humanity or searching for a God they were defending but did not find at the front. Many returned as honored heroes but questioned their participation in this ungodly and inhumane endeavor. First to question the war, I believe, are the artists. I believe it is always the artists who sit outside of much of a country's power who first raise the alarm of human conscience about the pools of folly that despots and government plunge the pure and the innocent. They are the first to challenge if a war is just or it is just a war. So it was in the Great War. The songwriters that sung the young soldiers off to slaughter greeted the returnees with music that sung of the horrors of war. Visual artists like John Singer Sargent painted a canvas 7 feet high and 20 feet long that was named Ghast, that now hangs in the Imperial War Museum in London and adorns the front of your order of worship. The painting depicts soldiers blinded by gas, being led in lines back to hospital tents and dressing stations, men lying on the ground all about their tents waiting for treatment. The effects of mustard gas did not become apparent for a half a day, and as it began to rot the body from inside and attack the bronchial tubes as well as the exterior of the skin, which blistered. Death, when it occurred, usually took up to 4 or 5 weeks. A nurse wrote, "I wish those people who write glibly about being a holy war and those orators who talk so much about going on no matter how long the war lasts or what it may mean could see a case, to say nothing of 10 cases of mustard gas in the early stages, could see the poor things burnt and blistered all over and the great mustard-colored blisters with blind eyes all sticky and stuck together. And always fighting for breath, with voices a mere whisper, saying that their throats are closing and know that they will choke." During the Great War, there appeared a group of artists who became known as the War Poets. The first hymn today was connected with the First World War. Gustav Holst tried to enlist but was rejected. So during the 1914 to 1916, he wrote the famous Planet Suite for piano. The first piece that we heard during the offertory was Mars, Bringer of War, which he wrote in 1914. After the war, Holst had trouble getting his suite played because of his German last name. The first hymn, Turn Back, was written at the request of Gustav Holst as an anti-war song. The poet Wilfred Owen was born in 1893, and he was a teacher in France until he visited a hospital in September of 1915. He returned to England to enlist, later saying, "I came out in order to help these boys, directed by leading them as well as an officer can, indirectly by watching their sufferings, that I may speak of them as well as a pleader can. I have done the first." When talking about senior British leadership, they were said to be donkeys leading racehorses. Owen once sent home in 1917, wounded, and returned in August a year and a half later, but got caught in machine gun attack a week before the armistice and died at age 25. About his poetry, he said, "My subject is war and the pity of war, and the poetry is in the pity." Frost's poem, On the Other Side of the Atlantic, has an also interesting story. It tells the story of very close to Frost's heart with the loss of Edward Thomas, and really tells, in Frost's symbolic way, another tragedy, another injustice of the Great War. We may never know why Frost chose not to publish the poem he wrote in 1918, but it was probably because of his great grief in the poem engendered in the poet and the unpopularity of any anti-war message that was seen as unpatriotic. The poem is dedicated to his English friend of Frost, Philip Edward Thomas. Thomas was educated at Oxford and was a writer and produced more than 30 books of prose and over 1 million words in reviews in the period leading up to the war. He once wrote that, quote, "I'm becoming a writing animal. I need to write something or other about a broomstick," he said. Thomas was prone to depression and in 1911 had a breakdown. And in October of 1913, he met Frost when Frost was relatively unknown and living in England, and they became great friends. Frost encouraged Thomas to write poetry, and this move into poetry released him from his depression by December of 1914. During the war, he wrote 142 poems over those next 2 years. And when Frost returned to New Hampshire, they continued to communicate by letters. And in 1915, Frost enlisted in the Artists' Rifles and volunteered for overseas service, saying he could no longer keep himself away from the fray despite being 37 years old, and died in April 1917 and had a copy of Frost's Mountain Interval with him at the front when he was killed. In 1916, Thomas wrote the poem titled February Afternoon. You will notice his symbolic use of birds and Frost's later poem. His poem starts, "Men heard the roar of starlings, saw 1,000 years ago, even as now, black rooks with white gulls follow the plow so that the first are last, until a call commands and the last are first again. A law which is of old, when one like me dreamed how 1,000 years might dust lie on his brow, yet thus would birds do between hedge and shaw. Time swims before me, making a day 1,000 years, when the broad plow land oak roars like mill-like, and men strike and bear the stroke of war as ever, audacious and resigned, and still sits aloft in array that we have wrought him, stone deaf and stone blind God." In the poem, the poet hears the parleying of starlings as politicians in the city, while the fighting of black rooks and white gulls continue to follow the plow as it turns over the soil to fight over the worms revealed. The poet leaves the reader with the inevitability of an event, as if war was an ordained human endeavor, while God remains stone deaf and blind. On hearing of Edward Thomas's death, Frost wrote, "To E.T., I slumber with your poems on my breast, spread open as I drop them half read through, like dove wings on the figure of a tomb, to see if in a dream they brought you. I might not have had a chance I missed in life, though some delay, and call you to your face, first soldier and then poet and then both, who died a soldier poet of your race. You meant that nothing should remain unsaid between us, brother. And this remained, the one thing more that was not then said, the victory for what it lost and gained. You went to meet the shells and brace of fire on Vimy Ridge. And when you fell that day, the war seemed over more for you than me, and not for me than for you the other way. However, though even me, who knew the foe thrust back unsafe behind the Rhine, and if I was not to speak of it to you and see you pleased once more with words of mine." But it was not only his death that disturbed Frost, for he had written Thomas in late 1915 about war, and Frost told Thomas, "You know, I haven't tried to be troubled by the war, but I believe that's half of what's ailed me ever since August of 1914. While in England at this time, Edward and his wife were off at a training camp, becoming a soldier, inspired by Thomas's months later. Frost sent Thomas his first explicit poem on the war. Not to Keep, it was called. It was about a wounded soldier's return home. And in the poem, he says, they sent him back to her, the letter came saying, and she could have him. And before she could be there was no hidden ill. Under the formal writing, he was there, living. As the war in Europe progressed in August of 1914, Frost writes another poem called Snow, and he sent it to Thomas. It too was disguised anti-war poem in which the snowstorm reflects the war, and the traveler in it was called Brother Meserve, and he must be going due to the fierce blizzard that was happening. Frost later wrote to Thomas saying, talk is almost too cheap when all your friends are facing bullets. All of Frost's anti-war imagery comes before America entered the war, as the rhetoric of politicians and papers built up that wave of nationalism that finally washes us overboard into the fray. When our country finally enters the war in 1917, when Frost's friend Edward Thomas died, Frost wrote the verse that I read. It tells of a war widow who comes to the window to watch a fight of crows and jays, the birds as soldiers, could escape the fray but stayed. The poem displays the darkness of all those left behind to grieve must endure. Frost and the artists that write about war don't write about its justice, but write about its unjustness to individuals. When Frost and other artists wrote their thinly veiled anti-war pieces, they could do nothing but that if they had heard it all over loud noises of national rhetoric. They were eventually to be heard. These artists were on both sides of the Great War. A German Jewish journalist who was conscripted to the Eastern Front wrote this, a prayer for the slaughtered. Heads off for prayer. Oh God, our dirty and bloodied old bones have crept forth once more from the trenches, chalky stone. We appear before you to pray and do not remain silent and ask you, oh God, why? Why have we given our heart's blood away while the Kaiser's six sons, all living, do stay? We once believed, oh, how stupid they were, and they made us all drunk. Why? One man screamed in his hospital bed for 6 months before dry food and staff doctors finished him off. Another became blind and took opium secretly. Three of us, between us, have only one arm. Why? Faith, love, war, and everything else we have lost. It is they, the powers, who toss us into it, like film gladiators. We had the best audience, but it didn't die with us. Why, Lord God, he says, if you really are there, as we daily do learn, descend from the starry heaven and show your concern. Come down to us mortals and send us your son. Tear the flags down, the orders, the decoration. Announce to the countries of the earth how we have suffered, how hunger, lice, shrapnel, and lies our bodies have covered. Chaplains have carried us to graves in your name, declare that they have lied. It is us that you blame. Chase us back to our graves, but answer us clear. We kneel before you as best we can. Please lend us your ear. If our dying has not been completely without point, do not annotate us with another year like 1914. Tell the people and drive them to desert. A battalion of corpses looks to you for comfort. All that remains for us is to come away before you and pray away. The poet eventually lost his German citizenship to the Nazis when the Nazis came to power and ended the Great War and died in exile in Sweden. These past 20 years, it has been a soldier bloggers and the embedded news people with their pictures that have raised the alarms of the justness of the Abu Ghraibs and the truths that governments tell not, and the comedians and Hollywood performers who push us this information into the national agenda. These are today's artists. As we go into this political season, we have heard many calls on nationalism, calling for less engagement and xenophobia. This was the same tactic Putin used to the Russian people in announcing his involvement in the Ukraine. May the lessons of the war to end all wars and our veterans who have fought for truth be told guide us in an ever-evolving and never-ending world.